Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling, well, one of the biggest contradictions in American history.
It's a huge one.
I mean, think about it. The founders of the United States were absolutely terrified of executive power.
They just fought a war to get rid of a king.
Exactly. And yet, the office they ended up creating, the American presidency, has become, I mean, there's no question, the most powerful political job on the planet. How on earth did that happen?
That is the ultimate paradox, isn't it? And it's the exact question Michael Nelson really digs into in his amazing study, The Presidency.
Okay.
And this is such a crucial deep dive for you, the listener, because we so often define the presidency by whoever is in the office right now. Nelson forces us to step back and look at the institution itself.
I love that framing. So we're moving beyond those really simplistic labels, you know, strong president, weak president.
Right, which are usually just emotional reactions.
Our mission today is to give you that deep historical, that constitutional context so you can understand what the system was meant to do versus, well, its explosive modern reality.
And when you get that foundation, current events stop feeling so overwhelming. They start to make a bit more sense.
Exactly. So before we get into the book, we have to talk about the author, Michael Nelson.
We do. To appreciate the rigor here, you have to know who he is. He's one of America's most distinguished political scientists. He's the Fulmer Professor at Rhodes College and a senior fellow at UVA's Miller Center.
Okay, so that background is really important. This isn't just another partisan commentator or, you know, a journalist with a hot take on the last 4 years.
Oh, not at all. This is a seasoned academic who has spent his entire career analyzing this one office.
Wow.
And his work just has this incredible analytical rigor, this historical depth, it's real scholarly integrity. He looks at the presidency from every angle you can think of, constitutional, historical, institutional, even biographical.
So he's sort of the perfect guide for this. He takes all these complex theories and all this history.
And he synthesizes it. He knows the primary sources inside and out.
And for us, that means we get a whole picture, not just what happened, but why it mattered. He connects the big, abstract machinery of government to the actual choices people made. You can really trust him as a guide.
So let's get into the book itself. Nelson's work is, it's this comprehensive exploration, but it's organized thematically.
Not chronologically. That's a key point.
It's so key. He's not writing a biography of presidents. He's writing the biography of the office.
And that story has to start with the founders and just how suspicious they were.
Deeply suspicious. They spent months at the Constitutional Convention just trying to figure out how to create an executive strong enough to lead.
To provide energy, as Hamilton put it.
Right, but limited enough so it wouldn't become a tyranny. That was the nightmare scenario.
So Nelson shows how the modern presidency is basically a product of that original design being stretched.
Stretched and molded. And it wasn't a slow, gradual thing. It was a series of massive historical shocks, wars, depressions.
And ambitious leaders who saw an opening.
Exactly. Leaders who knew how to push the boundaries of their authority.
So the growth of presidential power for Nelson is really this constant negotiation.
Yeah.
What are the big institutional pieces he looks at?
Oh, he covers everything. The formal constitutional powers, like commander-in-chief, then there's the institutional presidency itself.
You mean the bureaucracy that supports the president?
Yes, like the executive office of the president, the EOP. He also gets into the nuts and bolts of how presidents are selected, primaries, the electoral college, and of course those critical relationships with Congress and the courts.
So everything from the veto to what he calls the rhetorical presidency, using public appeal?
All of it. It's the whole operating manual.
Okay, let's dive in, starting right at the beginning with the constitutional origins.
The framers were just agonizing over this. Should the executive be one person or a small committee?
A committee sounds so strange to us now.
It does, but they were terrified of a new king. They knew a weak executive would fail, like under the Articles of Confederation. But a strong one was so risky. Their compromise was Article 2 of the Constitution.
And this is where Nelson brings in that fantastic concept, creative ambiguity. What does that actually mean?
It means they wrote down some specific powers, but they also used these deliberately vague phrases.
Like what?
Well, things like, the executive power shall be vested in a president. or the command to take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
They never actually define what the outer limits of executive power are.
Exactly. And that flexibility was intentional. It was designed so the office could adapt to crises they couldn't possibly foresee without having to amend the Constitution every 5 minutes.
That flexibility explains so much. It explains why, for the first century or so, what Nelson calls the traditional presidency, most presidents were pretty happy to just be administrators.
They really were. They mostly deferred to Congress. Congress was the center of political gravity back then.
But Nelson points out that the seeds for what was to come were already being planted by a few exceptions.
Oh, for sure. You have George Washington, who set these foundational precedents. He created the cabinet, asserted executive privilege, and, most importantly, he stepped down after 2 terms.
Voluntarily gave up power.
To show he wasn't a king. A massive statement.
And then you get Andrew Jackson.
Jackson completely changed the paradigm. He positioned himself as the direct representative of the people fighting against the elites in Congress.
That was a huge, huge shift.
But the real earthquake was Abraham Lincoln.
The Civil War.
Right. Faced with the literal survival of the country, he claimed these incredible, previously unimaginable war powers. He suspended habeas corpus, issued the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, he pushed the constitutional limits to their absolute breaking point.
So Lincoln showed what was dormant in that creative ambiguity.
He unleashed its potential.
Okay, so those early presidents established the potential for power. But Nelson argues the shift to the modern presidency really kicks off in the 20th century. Who starts that?
Theodore Roosevelt, TR. He's the one who originates this modern idea of the president as a proactive national leader.
And he had a philosophy to back it up, right?
He did, the stewardship theory. The idea is that the president is the steward of the people, and he can do anything that isn't explicitly forbidden by the Constitution.
That completely flips the old script.
Totally. The 19th century view was that a president could only do what was explicitly granted. TR turned that on its head.
And he used the office as a bully pulpit.
Yes. A national stage to rally the public, pressure Congress, and drive his own agenda. He basically rewrote the job description from administrator to, you know, national political chief.
And Woodrow Wilson built on that.
He did. He formalized the president's role as a legislative leader. He started giving the State of the Union address in person again, which was a huge deal. He was effectively demanding action from Congress.
But the final, you know, the institutionalization of this power, the system we live in today, that really comes down to one person.
Franklin D. Roosevelt, FDR.
Facing the Great Depression and World War II.
2 crises that just permanently changed what Americans expected their government, and especially their president, to do. And this is where Nelson's institutional focus really shines. In 1939, FDR creates the Executive Office of the President, the EOP.
Before that, the White House staff was tiny.
Right. Incredibly small. The EOP was revolutionary because it centralized all this policymaking power. It created a huge staff loyal only to the president.
Which let him develop his own policies separate from the traditional bureaucracy.
Exactly. It was a power shift from a limited administrator to something more like the CEO of the entire federal government.
But Nelson is quick to point out this explosion of power wasn't always a good thing.
Not at all. He goes into the rise of the imperial presidency, especially with Johnson and Nixon. This is where executive power just expanded way beyond its constitutional boundaries.
Things like refusing to spend money Congress had authorized.
Right, and unauthorized military actions. And of course, the backlash to that overreach Watergate Vietnam led to things like the War Powers Resolution.
So the power is always elastic. It expands in crisis. And then it contracts when there's mistrust.
Always. Which forces us to look at how that power actually works today. Nelson points out the president is both chief executive who struggles to control this massive bureaucracy.
It's like trying to steer an aircraft carrier with a canoe paddle.
That's a great way to put it. But then as chief legislator, the president is incredibly powerful. They set the national agenda. And just the threat of a veto is a huge negotiating tool.
Oh, massive.
This brings us to a really crucial insight of Nelson's the two presidencies thesis.
Two presidencies. Okay, what's that?
The idea is that presidents are far more powerful and have far fewer constraints in foreign policy, where they're the commander in chief, than they do in domestic policy.
Okay, why is that? Why do they get a freer hand when dealing with other countries?
Well, in a foreign crisis, Congress and the public tend to defer. There's that powerful instinct to rally around the flag.
So the president gets leeway that they would just never get when they're debating, say, a farm bill.
Never. And Nelson points out this creates a huge incentive for presidents to focus on the world stage, where they can look decisive instead of getting bogged down in domestic gridlock.
Which is so interesting. It explains why global events often dominate the presidency. If you want to look effective, it's easier to do it abroad.
It is. And that connects to the last piece, the rhetorical presidency, the need to go public.
To bypass Congress entirely and appeal directly to the people.
Yes. Presidents have to use their communication skills not just to inform, but to persuade, to build pressure on lawmakers. In the modern era, being a great communicator isn't just a bonus skill. Nelson says it's absolutely essential to succeed.
Okay, that historical context is so helpful. Let's talk about some of Nelson's biggest aha moments. Mm-hmm. The first one for me is that paradox of presidential power, what you call the expectations gap.
It's the source of so much public frustration. Nelson reminds us that we expect presidents to solve everything. The economy, gas prices, social division.
Everything.
Yet their actual constitutional power on domestic issues is, by design, very limited.
So if you feel like presidents are always underperforming or breaking their campaign promises,
it's not necessarily the person failing. It's often the system of separated powers working exactly as it should. That gap between what we expect and what's possible is built into the system.
Wow. Okay, so from the structure to the person, Nelson also says the personal and the political are inseparable.
Absolutely. The institutions matter, of course, but the individual president's character, their temperament, their specific skills, those things have a profound effect on whether they succeed or fail.
You can see that so clearly. Reagan's skill as a communicator really moved public opinion.
Or on the other side, Nixon's paranoia, which led directly to illegal acts that destroyed his presidency. Character isn't just a talking point. It's a real operational factor.
And the third big theme is that power is relational. It has to be negotiated.
This is the ultimate lesson. Presidential power isn't something a president just has. It's something they have to constantly earn and bargain for with Congress, the courts, and the public.
It really reinforces the genius of the founders, doesn't it? Success isn't about dictating. It's about building coalitions and compromising, separated institutions, sharing powers.
Exactly. Power is a dynamic resource, not some static thing you hold.
Nelson is so good at boiling these huge ideas down. Let's talk about a few of the core concepts that really capture what the book is about. The first one is about that initial design.
Right.
The idea is something like the framers created the presidency with a kind of creative ambiguity, providing a grant of power in Article 2 that was specific enough to establish authority, but vague enough to allow for immense growth.
In the face of unforeseen national crises.
Right.
Yes, that one statement explains the incredible adaptability of the whole system. It's why, when the nation really needed it, Civil War, Great Depression, the presidency was able to rise to the challenge.
Okay, here's the second one, and this one really hits on that public frustration. The fundamental paradox of the modern presidency is the ever-widening gap between what the American people expect the president to do and what the Constitution and the political system actually empower him to do.
That's the engine of our modern political dissatisfaction right there. Every president comes in with these sky-high expectations, and every single one runs into the reality of the system's limits. It's a huge reason why approval ratings almost always trend downward over a term.
And one final idea, this one about what makes for effective leadership. The most successful presidents have been those who understood that in American democracy, power is not seized but persuaded, not commanded but negotiated.
I love that. It's such a vital correction to this image we have of the heroic lone leader. Nelson shows that the truly great presidents, the Lincolns, the Roosevelts, were master politicians. They managed relationships and built consensus instead of just issuing orders.
So understanding all this history is incredibly practical.
Mm-hmm.
What are the real-life applications for you, the listener?
Well, the first one is huge. You become a much more informed and realistic voter.
How so?
When a candidate gets on stage and promises to single-handedly fix the economy on day one, this book teaches you to immediately be skeptical. You can weigh that promise against the massive institutional hurdles they're going to face. Congress, the courts, the bureaucracy.
It also helps us demythologize the president.
Yes.
Instead of seeing them as a king or a savior who's responsible for everything good or bad, you see them as a political actor who is hemmed in by this very deliberate very complex system.
And that leads to a much more mature public conversation. It tempers the extreme hero worship and the extreme vilification.
And it makes watching the news so much more interesting.
Oh, for sure. When you see a president issue an executive order or fight with Congress over the budget, you now understand the history behind it, the specific powers being used, and where the struggle is likely to happen. Political drama turns into an understandable negotiation.
You know, the thing that stands out most to me is Nelson's point that the story of the presidency is really the story of America's own identity. It's our ongoing debate about what the role of government should even be.
That's a great way to put it.
And we learn that true leadership doesn't come from breaking the constitutional rules, but from working creatively within them.
And for me, the most valuable lesson is realizing that checks and balances, and yeah, even political gridlock, are often features, not bugs. They're there to prevent a dangerous concentration of power and protect our liberty. They aren't always a sign the system is broken. Sometimes it means the system is working exactly as it was designed.
So success for any president is always this delicate dance.
It is a dance between personal skill, historical circumstance, and that constant negotiation built into its brilliant, ambiguous design.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.